From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
Happy Pride Month and welcome back to the Gay PHX Podcast. This week, we're taking a journey through LGBTQ plus history with Art Smith from Gabe Archives, a project dedicated to preserving the stories, photos, memorabilia, and memories of bars and gathering places that helped build our community long before social media connected us all. It's a fascinating conversation about where we've been, why it matters, and why preserving our history is more important than ever. But before we get there, we want to take a moment to highlight two events that mean a great deal to our community. This Sunday, June 14th, friends, family, performers, and community members will gather at Cruisin' 7th Cocktail Lounge to support Regina Gazelle's funeral fundraiser. Regina is a legendary part of Arizona's LGBTQ plus community, touching countless lives through her talent, humor, and generosity. One of the things that makes our community so special is that when someone needs us, we show up. If Regina ever made you smile, laugh, or feel a little more at home, we hope you'll consider stopping by and helping celebrate her incredible legacy. And coming up on June 16th, we're inviting everyone to join us at Harkins Christown for a special community screening of Stop That Train, hosted by Barbara Seville, starring RuPaul, Ginger Minj, Jubilee, Brooklyn Heights, Simone, Latrice Royale, Monet Exchange, and more. It's shaping up to be a fun night with friends and community. You can find out all the details at gayphx.com/Barbara, B-A-R-B-R-A. We're also excited to kick off our Summer Solutions collaboration with Lookout News, bringing more conversations through the summer focused on people, organizations, and ideas working to make Arizona stronger. But first, filling in for Brian this week's in Brian's Hot 3, please welcome our special guest host, Delos.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, everybody. Brian is taking a well-deserved timeout this week, so I'm Delos, sitting in for your Desert Den Daddy, and I've got three events that deserve a spot on your calendar. Let's get into this week's Hot 3. Hot pick number 3. Are you smarter than the average bear? Thursday night at Pato's Bunkhouse Saloon, it's time to find out if all those random facts you've been carrying around in your head are actually useful. Are you smarter than the average bear? Trivia kicks off at 7 p.m. and promises plenty of laughs, a little friendly competition, and at least one answer that will have everyone in the room yelling, "I knew that!" Whether you're a trivia champion or just there for the cocktails and questionable confidence, this is one of those nights where the fun is guaranteed, even if the answers aren't. Hot pick number 2, Stop That Train! All aboard! One of the most talked about LGBTQ plus film events of this summer is rolling into Arizona, and we're making a night of it. Stop That Train stars RuPaul, Ginger Minj, Jujubee, Brooklyn Heights, Simone Latrice Royale, Monet Exchange, and a whole cast of familiar faces from across the drag universe. If you're in Phoenix, join Barbara Seville and a whole bunch of community members for this screening at Harkins Christown on June 16th. And if you're listening from Southern Arizona, we've got you covered too. There's a Tucson screening happening as well. Movies are fun, drag queens are fun. Watching drag queens with a theater full of your friends, that's a memory. Get all the details right now at gayphx.com/Barbara. Hot pick number 1, the Regina Gazelle Funeral Fundraiser. This Sunday's number 1 pick isn't about a party, it's about community. For decades, Regina Gazelle helped shape Arizona's LGBTQ plus scene. She made us laugh, she made us think, and she reminded us that showing up for each other matters. On June 14th, friends, family, performers, and community members will gather to help support Regina's final arrangements and celebrate a life that touched so many people throughout Phoenix and beyond. One of the things I love most about our community is that when someone needs us, we show up. That's exactly what this fundraiser is all about. If Regina ever made you smile, inspired you, entertained you, or simply made this community feel a little more like home, then this is your chance to give a little of that love back. And that's this week's Hot 3. For these events and hundreds more happening across Phoenix, Tucson, and beyond, visit gayphx.com. I'm Delos, filling in for Brian this week. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, life is way too short to stay home every weekend. See you out there.
Want all the details? head over to GabePHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the Valley.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person, with your tax year countdown. If you are supporting a child, biological, adopted, donor conceived, or part of your blended or chosen family, your credits may change when they turn 17. Review your withholding now to avoid an April surprise. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, before social media, before dating apps, before rainbow logos showed up every June, there were gay bars. There were safe spaces, community centers, dance floors, chosen family, and sometimes the only place where queer people could truly be themselves. But so much of that history is disappearing because photos fade, flyers get tossed, and stories vanish. That's why today's guest matters. Through Gay Barchives, he's helped preserve LGBTQ plus bar history, newspapers, photos, memorabilia, and the stories that help shape queer life across generations. Because preserving queer history isn't just about looking backwards, it's about making sure we're never erased. Please welcome to the Rainbow Tinted Microphone, Art Smith. Howdy, Art.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And thank you for that huge round of applause. That's great.
Hey, we all deserve that. We all work hard. We're all trying to make things better. So for people listening and just discovering Gay Barchives, what exactly is it?
Gay Barchives is a project that I started around the beginning of the COVID debacle. And it basically came out of me realizing that so many of the stories of our gay bars were being lost. We document the riots, the politicians, the legislation, all kinds of things. But the stories of the gay bars were swept under the carpet. And in my opinion, the bars are what built our community. That's where we formed all these organizations that we have. That's where we made our friends, where we met our partners. Some of us started businesses because of the connections in the gay bars. So I thought it was really important to document all of that history. And the name itself comes as a portmanteau of the words gay plus bar plus archives.
Yeah, when I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. I love brilliant things.
It just came to me. And so I went ahead and launched the Facebook group about 5 years ago. And it has grown exponentially. We are right now teetering on the edge of 58,000 members.
Oh, wow.
And there's a lot of stories in there.
So what made you first realize that our queer history needed to be preserved before it disappeared?
Back in the day, I was involved in gay journalism. I worked with a number of publications for the gay market, including Guide Magazine, Ovation, Hotspots, Watermark. And I always was fascinated by the bar culture itself. I was a pretty regular visitor to a lot of the bars, and it always intrigued me. But after a conversation with a bar owner in Atlanta that I knew, her family at one time owned about a dozen gay bars in Atlanta. I posted something about it, and the bar was called Backstreet. It was an iconic Atlanta bar that lasted about 30 years. And people started commenting, oh, I love Backstreet. I used to go there all the time, but we also used to go to the Armory. We went to Bulldogs. We went to the Cove. We went to all these other bars. And it took on a life of its own. So I started looking into some of those other bars and trying to track down their logos, which are often lost because they were preserved in an old newspaper clipping or a matchbook cover or something, and nobody had access to them. So I started digitally reconstructing the logos, and it morphed into this project that now there's over 5,500 gay bar logos from around the world that I've tracked down and digitally reconstructed. So it kind of, it was organic. It just grew on its own.
And that's this loop of how many is it? 3,000?
Yeah, the latest loop is 5,500.
5,500.
But okay. I've been adding to that. I haven't put the new one out yet, but I've been adding to that. So the next go round, it'll be probably 6,000 to 6,500.
And so, full disclosure, what I'm talking about is he's got a YouTube video that cycles through all the different bar logos from around the world. And it's fascinated me so much that I literally have a screen that just plays it all day long. And so I can just check out all these bar logos because they're fascinating.
But you know what else is great about it? There's no audio intentionally.
Right.
And with 5,500 logos, they're each up there only for a couple of seconds. So it's not, you're not staring at it for an hour.
Right.
But it still takes about 3 hours to go through the whole video. And
yeah.
What's great about it is if you show it at a party or at a bar event, it strikes up conversations because people see it and they go, oh, wow, look at that, Boots. I used to go to a Boots in California, or I used to go to a Boots in Boston or Fort Lauderdale. And people start talking about it, even if their specific bar's logo isn't there.
Right.
It brings back all kinds of emotion. So,
well, and because there's so many Boots and different varieties, someone will catch it and go, wait, that's not the logo I remember. And it still sparks the conversation. And with Arizona being such a transient city, people from all over, I can't wait for us to put this on at one of the events just in the background and see what kind of comments we get from people.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the gay bar world, you mentioned you're based out of Phoenix, right?
Yep.
So the interesting thing about the gay bar market is a lot of the stories overlap. So one of the most iconic gay bars in Chicago back in the day was a place called Little Jim's. And Little Jim's was very popular. It was a hole-in-the-wall neighborhood bar. I spoke to Jim recently. He's still alive and well and living in South Florida. He had also opened one up in Fort Lauderdale and one in Phoenix.
Oh, wow.
So the Little Jim's that was in Phoenix is related to the other two Little Jim's in Illinois and Florida. And we see that a lot. We see a lot of times where the bar owners may own bars in multiple cities as well.
Much like Charlie's, I'll say. Because Charlie's
much like Charlie.
Vegas and here, and I think they've got a third location, but I can't recall where.
Yeah, and they've got some related business in Mexico as well, I think.
Yes. Wow. How do we, as an older generation, help the younger generation understand how important gay bars are, because I feel like they just think, oh, it's just a bar, it's just a place to drink, and it's so much more than that. That's where all of my first gay experiences happened. It was either at the bar or at the park, to be honest.
Absolutely.
And we didn't have those safe spaces that we do now.
Right.
And even those are shrinking.
Social media. We didn't have social media. We didn't have apps. We had in-person contact. And most of the time, I went to my first gay bar in the late 70s. And I was brought in there by a friend of mine, had no idea it was a gay bar until I stood there for about 5 minutes overlooking the dance floor. And I looked at him and I said, those are all guys on the dance floor. And he goes, yeah, my college roommate introduced me to this bar and it's a gay bar. And I was like, wow, that's cool. There's places to go. And I started, every time I went to another city, I would look for the gay bars. And that's how you built your community. That's how you made your friends. That's how you picked up your tricks. That's how you entertained yourself. And
it was your mall. It was your grocery store. It was your...
It was. And at that time, we used to go out, at least I did, 5 or 6 nights a week. Even
right.
If you weren't going to get drunk.
No.
But you would just have dinner with a friend, go see a movie, whatever you did. And you'd say, hey, let's swing by the bar and see who's there. And you'd talk to people and hang out and dance and whatever you were going to do. And that was your whole community center, your church, your synagogue,
bars,
whatever you want to call it.
Bars used to have volleyball courts in the backyard, even in Omaha.
They did.
The Run had a volleyball court, and that's what we would do after hours is we would play volleyball. I know that sounds silly, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, but when you didn't have any other sense of community, that's what you did, because that's where the people
were.
Now,
I don't know if this was true in Phoenix, but in a lot of places, bars had pools, too. which you would never do today, probably.
Yeah, now you have, I think we have one. There's one place here called the Pemberton, but it's like this huge thing, and they have a pool that's getting in the center. It's the Pemberton is such a huge place. There are QR codes so that you can scan to get a map so you can get out.
So you don't get lost.
Yes. But Charlie's here used to have volleyball. That's now the huge dance floor area, but that used to be the volleyball court back in the day.
Yeah.
Because
it's amazing how important the bars were to the development of our community. And even as you, I'm sure, know in Phoenix, bars like Charlie's are major supporters of the nonprofit organizations that serve the community.
Oh, yes.
They do fundraisers, their drag shows, and whatever, may give some money to a particular cause. They have annual events, award ceremonies, whatever they do to promote and support the local nonprofit organizations and community groups whenever they can. And people don't realize that all of these organizations came out of the bars. They didn't start on their own on a street corner. It was the bars, the drag queens, that really put their effort behind them and gave us all these kind of support groups that we have in our communities now.
And myself, I've actually just recently learned that within, I'll say, the last 5 to 10 years. I used to work in radio, and so the promotions that we did, they were all paid for by sponsors and whatnot. So I just thought that's how events happened. And then when I started to spend more time at the big gay bars hanging out, not just like going to an event and then going home, but being more involved and realizing, oh, these events are thrown by groups of people in the community. These bars are engines of economic stability for the community. If you don't support the bars, you are also not supporting other parts of the community that you don't realize.
And if I'm not mistaken, both Charlie's and the Phoenix Gay Rodeo started about the same time in pretty much the same neighborhood.
I know they are very intertwined. The rodeo is actually down the street from us, and Charlie's is up in the neighborhood, but they've always been synonymous, which all, of course, also makes sense since it was the country western bar. But yes, they do raise a lot of money, and through the rodeo, and it's just amazing to see how much money they are able to bring in and disperse back out to the community. And that's part of the reason we wanted to bring people on. There's been a lot of things I've seen on social media trying to explain to young folks, I'll say, why the bars are so important. That's why when you were available, I was like, oh, yes, awesome. This is the talk we need right now.
One thing I've noticed, and it seems pretty relevant to what you were just commenting on, is that in the Facebook group, in the last 60 days or so, as the group has grown larger and I've seen more activity going on, I've also noticed that there are more younger people joining and more women joining. In the beginning, it was pretty much 75% plus gay white men. And as the project has grown, the audience has grown. And I had put up a post a couple of weeks ago asking what Gay Bar Kides meant to our members. And there's been hundreds of comments on that post. And what really warmed my heart is there's two kind of a dichotomy of angles that goes on there. There's one end, which is the older people, the people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, that say, oh, wow, this brings back so many great memories. I haven't had anybody to talk to about what I did in the 70s or 80s. I love thinking about this. It's warmed my heart. But the other half is younger people saying, oh my God, I didn't realize how important the bars were and what they meant to the community and how some of these people are so connected and telling these heartwarming stories. And so Facebook has been like an engine to get that word out to a bigger audience. And it is being appreciated by people who have never had a chance to be at a bar in the 70s or 80s because they weren't born till the 90s or to the 2000s.
Right. It's one of these weird dichotomies. It's so great that you have, you know, in high school, they have gay support groups and people can get together and they can talk. And it's awesome that they get to experience that at such a young age. But then they don't experience that first time you go to the gay bar when you've been so closeted for so long and hidden away. How I just wonder what kind of how they have that same kind of first club experience. Do you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for me, it was like this huge eye-opening thing. But nowadays, probably most people, by the time they're old enough to go into a gay bar, which is either going to be 18 or 21, depending on whether the bar allows people.
Right. Or if there's an after hours or.
Yeah. But by the time they reach 18 years old, I suspect most younger people now already are aware of the gay community. They've seen it in shows like Queer as Folk and Heated Rivalry and all this.
Right.
They've heard about it from their friends. They've seen it in news stories, and there's magazines like The Advocate and Out and all that. So there's plenty of knowledge about it.
Right.
When I came out, I had no idea that such a thing as a gay bar existed. I didn't live in New York City or Chicago. I didn't have this huge audience of people to tell me about what the gay bars were. So I just stumbled into one, and that opened my eyes and said, hey, you are not the only one like this out here. You're not right. The oddball. You're not a complete outlier. There's a huge community. And that helped in every single city I worked in, lived in, or visited. In fact, when I used to travel to another city, I would go up to the bartender, whatever bar I was in, and I would introduce myself to him. And I would say, hey, I'm visiting from Atlanta, or I just moved here from Tampa. Who should I know? What should I know? Introduce me to people. And they would. And I made a lot of friends that way, because the bar was the place. I couldn't go into the mall and walk into Abercrombie and Fitch and say, hey, if any gay guys walk in here, tell them to come over and sing hi to me. Even though probably half the people there were gay, they're not.
Right. It wasn't the time, place.
So the bars made a huge impact on my exposure to the gay scene. And it is interesting now that we went through a period once gay marriage was legalized and things started changing in the country, where a lot of the younger people felt that they had arrived. They could be as gay as they wanted. They could tattoo a rainbow flag on their forehead and they were cool. And then in the last few years, with some of the conservative governors in some of the red states, a certain individual in the White House and his crew, they started to peel back those freedoms and rights that we thought we had. And so now what I'm starting to see is the younger people are starting to understand, well, hey, we can go on a date to Applebee's and have cocktails if we want, but we are not going to organize anything in Applebee's. We are not going to connect with our community on the level that we can in a bar and make our existence safer and better for us and the people that follow us. So I think there's starting to be a renewed interest in, we'll call it the bar culture, but really now they're even leaning more toward non-alcoholic beverages and things like that.
So a lot of the bars have mocktails now to cater, because it's not, people are starting to, like you said, understand it's not about going there to get trashed. There was a time, there is a phase, there is a whatever, but that's not the core. I can't tell you how many community centers that we've had in Phoenix that have opened and closed, but guess what stays around? The bars.
The bars. Yeah. And that's another thing. People talk about community centers, and I love them. I think it's great that they're in cities all around the country. But the problem is that the bars tend to be open when people are available to socialize. A lot of community centers, for some reason,
have business hours
from 9 to 5. And most people I know are either not awake at 9 o'clock in the morning or they're at work and at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's not the same as the bars, where they can go and stay there till midnight if they want. They can communicate and dance and do all kinds of things. And they generally have a bigger crowd. Community centers, very often you go there and there's maybe 3 people there.
Right.
And it's hard to socialize effectively with 3 people that you don't even know.
It's hard to justify. Phoenix is a growing, expensive city, the cost of that. So what we've been fortunate, I'm going to use this as a little plug for something that we have locally here. The Queer Center is a virtual community center. They don't have a physical location, but they focus on providing services and bringing services to people where they are versus trying to get people to come to a place to get services. And
the other thing too that I've noticed is that when I was younger, when I was in my 20s and even 30s, I often lived in the gayborhood. Gayborhoods are getting priced out.
Right.
The success of gay bars and gay businesses and the traffic that we've brought to those once blighted areas has driven the real estate costs through the roof. So now a lot of people, partly because they can't afford to live there and partly because they don't feel the need to be there, they can live in a suburb and still feel safe, they have to travel to get to the community centers. That wasn't the case back in the 80s or 90s because you probably lived a couple blocks away. You could have walked there. And now they're serving a bigger area. And it's a little tedious sometimes to travel over there and see what's going on at the community center. So, yeah, a virtual center is a great idea. I'm glad to hear that Phoenix has something that dynamic going on.
And again, because the city is so sprawling and we knew that we had people that were in outskirts. And so instead, we try and get volunteers to go out there. I love the program. We love being part of it. Jesse's just amazing. But back to you. What's one story or artifact that you've come across that really stuck with you emotionally?
God, there's so many. I've done over 250 video interviews about gay bars. So I've heard all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. One of my favorite stories, actually, was from a woman in Atlanta. I knew her personally. I had experienced her bars on a firsthand basis when I lived in Atlanta. And her name was Dina Collins. And Dina was, she had owned a lesbian bar, and then she decided to open up a bar called Dina's One Mo' Time. And it was a country theme bar. She, I believe, identifies as a lesbian, and everybody thought it was going to be a lesbian bar, but she was very open about wanting men to come, and she would invite them and befriend them, and it became a very mixed bar. But while it was open is when AIDS was really
rampant,
hitting the scene in Atlanta. A few years later than you heard about it in California or in New York, but it was starting to impact the Atlanta gay community. And Dina was one of the biggest supporters of AIDS causes in Atlanta. And so much so that I was having a conversation with her on the phone a couple of years ago. And she said, I used to spend night in the bar. She said, I had an office in the back and I had a fold-out sofa. And she said, I used to spend the night in the bar. And I said, why would you do that? And she said, we didn't close until 3 a.m. By the time we did all the paperwork and cleaned up, it was 4 a.m. And I wanted to be here at 7 so I could make breakfast for the men in our community that were suffering from HIV and AIDS. So I would just sleep for a few hours and then I would get up and I would offer them a place to have a meal and to take a shower. We had a shower back in the office. And I would take care of the community that way. And I thought, those are the kind of stories that you don't necessarily know about the people that are running your bar. She wasn't making a fortune. She wasn't driving a Mercedes or a Rolls. She was living modestly, but she was doing everything she could do to support the guys in the community that were suffering with HIV and AIDS. And also, as a result, her lesbian friends were largely the people who were caretakers for that community. So she really played a big role in how Atlanta responded to the AIDS crisis back in the 80s.
That's an incredible story. What kind of materials do you collect and preserve?
Mostly what I focus on is digital. I have gotten quite a few magazines and Damron's guides and things of that nature. And I will take pictures of the relevant ads and pages and put them into a digital format so that they can be viewed by anyone around the world. But I also, when there's actual physical memorabilia, especially larger things, I have forged a relationship with the Stonewall National Museum, which is located in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It's an independent gay museum and archives. They're not connected to any government entity or university or anything like that. And they're a private 501c3. They've been going on for over 50 years now. And I make sure the materials get to there. We launched a project a couple years ago that was called Raising the Bars, which was designed to elevate the presence of bar history in archival projects, because so many of the universities and government agencies that have formed LGBTQ museums focus on, like I said earlier, the legislation, the politicians, the activism. And I wanted to make sure that there was a greater effort with different archives to preserve the memories of the bars. So most of the larger physical things that I deal with go to Stonewall National Museum.
Well, and it seems while all of that other history, the government ones that you're talking about and legislation, that's great, that's important. It's the heart is not there, though. Like you're talking about these stories of the bartender that, or the owner that stays there at the bar so that they can feed people in the morning. That's what's lost if we don't have Absolutely. Things like what you're doing.
And the thing is, too, you also notice, like in my Facebook group, you'll also notice that in my Facebook group, I've looked at the statistics that Facebook provides about interactions and what goes on there. And Facebook has told me that in the 28-day period prior to me looking at it, which was a couple weeks ago, that our Facebook group had 3,800 plus posts, 102,000 comments,
wow,
almost 500,000 reactions on individual posts, and 6.3 million views. So that's something you don't find in a static archival project. If the biggest gay museum in the country had a Facebook group, they would not get 6 million views on their posts in a month, because it doesn't warm the heart. People look at it casually. They don't interact with it.
Right.
In gay archives, people have a connected history there. They have, you know, everybody in the gay community pretty much has a story about a bar, or they have a bar that was particularly special to them for whatever reason. And they can all connect on that level.
And once you start the conversation, it's a snowball effect. When people Absolutely. Are like, oh, I've been there. Oh, I remember this. Oh, I remember that person. Oh, I remember this bartender. Oh, I remember, you know, at that event. That's what's awesome about it, is that because it's a, what you've got with Barchives, Gay Barchives, is a living, breathing community of connection from around the world.
Absolutely. And I've noticed, like I said, it's based on an international concept. It's not designed to be only one city. Let's talk about the gay bars in Chicago. It's everywhere. And so what surprised me a little bit, the group has a search feature on it. You can go right below the main banner on the top of the Facebook group. There's a little magnifying glass, and you can type something in and search for it. And for instance, if you search for Phoenix, you will find that there have been dozens of posts about Phoenix, and some of them have had 10 to 15,000 views on the post just about Phoenix. And I've had other posts that exceeded 100,000 views within the first 48 hours of being online. So that gives you an idea of how many people are interacting with this and seeing the posts. And it's right. not people that are famous that are posting it. It's any random member puts a post up and you never know.
It's famous. It's the place that's famous that you're talking about. And that's the connection that everyone has, even if it's not necessarily at the same time. Sorry, I got distracted because we're in the Eagles and I just saw the Eagle Cathedral City popped up and I was like, oh, look, that's already up there. That's awesome. We work with the guys there. So that's why it's great to see that.
It's not open yet, is it?
It is not yet. No, it's in the old barracks location and the barracks is working to get moved over here to Phoenix. So they're working.
I've heard.
Yes. So it's quite exciting.
The Eagles kind of an exciting concept. I have a separate video that's just Eagle logos, and it contains over 60 logos. There have been more than 60 gay bars using the Eagle name around the world since the 70s, and a lot of them are still around. It's one of the most active gay bar names. I don't think there's ever been another gay bar name that's been more popular, but in recent years, we've also seen numerous new Eagles open. Cathedral City is getting ready to open. Chicago is getting ready to officially open again after 15 years of being closed. And there's a brand new one in Columbia also.
It's such a popular name that aren't there going to be two Eagles in Chicago that are not associated?
Yes, the Chicago Eagle and the Eagle Chicago. Yeah.
Because, you know, we just can't be more complicated.
Can't get enough.
What's something that you think younger listeners today would probably be shocked to learn about queer life in the 70s, 80s, or even the 90s?
One of the most surprising things to me, I didn't really pay attention to it because, like I said, my first experience was in the late 70s. And even in cities like New York, in the 60s and 70s, it was illegal for two men in a bar to touch each other or to dance together.
Oh, wow.
A lot of bars, they would require guys to have their hands on top of the bar counter when you were drinking so they could tell you weren't grabbing the next guy's leg or something. And in many cities, you had to have a separate, what they called a cabaret license, to even allow dancing of any kind in the bar. And different people, different vice groups or whatever in different cities, the police would come in and they would raid the bars regularly. Arrest people for having their hand on the shoulder of the guy next to them or hugging the guy when they walk in the door and saying, hey, Joe, haven't seen you in a long time. They round them up, throw them in the paddy wagon. And a lot of times they would actually publish their names, maybe their photograph or whatever in the newspaper. And these people would lose their jobs, their homes, their families would abandon them. So a lot of people don't realize how different it was 50, 60 years ago than it is now. They think it was just like a little, you just had to be a little discreet and you're okay.
Right.
No, if they even suspected, you could basically lose
everything.
Your life. You could even be committed. You could be committed to a mental hospital if they had enough evidence to show that you were a homosexual.
Which is the same thing they're trying to do with our trans brother and sister now. They're trying to say that they're not mentally well. They're trying to reopen that doorway. And we need to stick together and keep that shut, by the way.
I don't know if this is true in Phoenix. I haven't spoken to a lot of new bar owners in Phoenix. But in a lot of cities, I'm noticing that some of the newer concepts for gay bars are becoming more and more queer. I know a lot of people hate that word. This is the 21st century. I use gay, queer, LGBTQ, all to refer to the same community because different people use different terms. But what I'm saying is that I'm seeing new bars open that have more of a queer attitude.
Right.
They want everybody there. There are even Eagles that have trans doormen or whatever. It's moving away from the segregation that we used to experience in our bars. And it's becoming a lot of the older white men particularly are not a fan of that. They think that we should still have
separation,
all male. Right. And a lot of the spaces are not that way now, partially because politics, the politically correct thing to do is to welcome everybody. but partially because of economics also, because the young people today do not go out and support the bars the way I did 50
right.
years ago.
Because they're not that same center, so to speak, that to our worlds that they were, because that was our only place. Now there are several options. There are more fragmented places, and that's great, but that means that we still need to make a concerned effort, an effort to go to the bars. We try to go to all the different ones for different events, for different times, for different things, to spread the love, to make sure that we're supporting them all. Now, for someone who's listening who has old photos, flyers, magazines, or bar memorabilia, what should they do?
There's two different things I've had people do. One thing is everybody's got a camera now, and it's built into their phone pretty much. So take some pictures of the ads, of the documents, whatever, and post them in the Facebook group. Post them with information in the description that makes sense. So say
some context.
Hey, I just found a bunch of pictures. Sometimes I've seen people post things like, oh, look at these cool pictures. And then they post the pictures. The search engines do not read pictures that way. So if you put in that same post, hey, look at all the cool ads I found from gay bars in Phoenix in the 80s. Now the search engine has words to search for.
Right.
And other members have words to search for. So they can go in there and put in Phoenix 1980s and they'll probably show up. That's the first thing I would say is, you know, digitize them, take a picture of them, post them online. I've had some people that will send me envelopes full of pictures or magazines. I had one guy in Atlanta that sent me two cardboard boxes full of vintage gay bar magazines from the South.
Oh, wow.
And it was truly a walk down memory lane to go through there because I had been to many of those places when I lived in Atlanta for almost 20 years. And then, of course, they find their way into the archives as well. And Stonewall will put them on their shelves. They're also good. Another thing that I liked about Stonewall, besides not being affiliated with the government agency, which could be detrimental, I happen to live in Florida. So in Florida, you never know what day the governor's going to say, hey, if you got gay stuff in your archives, throw it away because we're not going to pay to store it. But an independent doesn't have to deal with that. If it's an independent right. museum like Stonewall, they can do what they want. But they're also working on digitizing as much information as they can. And to me, that's the critical part, because just like you mentioned, Phoenix is a very transient city, but so are all the other cities that are major hubs, San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Memphis, Nashville, Atlanta,
yeah.
Tampa, Fort Lauderdale. And these people, you could have every magazine that ever existed in Phoenix in a museum in Phoenix. And a lot of the people that went there are never going to see it because they now live in Las Vegas or they live in New York or they live in Miami.
Right.
So digitizing it makes it accessible to everybody. And so that's why I focus so much on the virtual world.
You can get it to more people easier too. It also takes up less space in reality.
You don't have to have a 50,000 square foot air-conditioned facility with
right.
a property manager.
What do you hope that future generations take away from projects like Gabe Archives?
I think maybe the biggest lesson is that what we are living today is history for the future. So a lot of people discount what happens in the now, what they're doing today or what the bars are or the organizations are that they're experiencing today. I have told myself many times in the beginning of this project that I wished that the people in the 60s, 70s, 80s had done a better job of archiving information about our gay spaces. And when I say gay, I'm including LGBTQ, queer.
Right.
It's just back then everything was gay.
A lesbian bar was gay. Yes.
They were gay women. So be aware of the fact that what you are living today is going to be somebody else's history in the future. 20, 30, 50 years from now, people are going to want to know what happened in 2026. So be conscious of that and preserve some of that history as we go along. Fortunately, social media does a lot of that for us because, like it or not, people are posting pictures of the hamburger and french fries they had for dinner last night. A lot of that will be around for a while, but make a more conscious effort and save the stories that are important so that people in the future will know how our community has evolved over the decades. A lot of people don't realize how long this history is, too. I have a couple of friends that have written books about specific cities, one about Chicago, one was about South Florida, and each of them, each of those books catalogs 1,000 gay spaces that have existed in those areas over the last century. And even Phoenix, which is not the place that you would say, hey, this is the gayest place on the planet, and they must have a history that goes back forever. Phoenix had an openly recognized gay bar in the 30s.
Wow.
And it was around, let me rephrase that. It opened in the 30s. It was renamed and reclaimed as a gay space in the 40s. And that was the 307 Club.
Oh.
And it was around until 2000. So it lasted over 50 years as a gay space. And even Newtown, which is still open, right?
It is. It has new owners. It's shifted quite a few times. But yes, it's, I believe it's our oldest gay bar here.
55 years. And it's still thriving. A Charlie's is 40 years old. There was a lesbian bar there in the 40s called Kay's Happy Landing. So Phoenix has a lot of history too. And a lot of people that live there, especially younger people, probably don't realize some of it. The one piece that really surprised me, and I don't know if you knew this or not, you probably do, but what really shocked me is when I learned that Monica Helms designed the transgender pride flag in 1999 in Phoenix. That pink, light blue, and white striped flag that is known as the transgender pride flag was actually designed 27 years ago in Phoenix.
I did know that, and only because of Marshall Shore, our hip historian, who we also love to talk to. It was the one that educated me on that.
I love Marshall. I interviewed him. I think he might have been the first interview I did about Phoenix.
He's also one that told me about the 301, which was right across the street from where I worked for 6-7 years, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah, 307.
307, sorry, the 307.
That's okay.
So where can listeners follow your work, explore more, and join in on the conversation?
So everything I do from the beginning of this project is under Gabe Archives. So that's G-A-Y, B as in boy, A-R-C-H-I-V-E-S. And if you do a Google search for Gabe Archives, you will find our Twitter, our YouTube, our Instagram, our Facebook. Our website is GabeArchives.com. Everything is under the same umbrella, which makes it so much easier, and it makes it so much for the search engines that you will find tons of information. Even if you put in Phoenix bar history, you'll probably find Gabe Archives listed in that because we've done so many posts and so many images up there that we're pretty much recognized by the AI bots, by Google and Gemini and Siri and all them as a leading authority on gay bar history.
Awesome. Art, thank you so very much. I'm so glad I stumbled across this. I love what you're doing. Thank you for the hard work that you're putting forward. And again, thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Billy. And thank you so much for reaching out and preserving some of these memories of Phoenix and around the world. I look forward to seeing a lot more of your local listeners coming into the Gabe Archives group and sharing their stories with some of these bars while they're still around to do it.
Pride lives here.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma. And I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about health and intimacy. Talking about sexual health doesn't have to be awkward. It can actually be empowering and even, dare I say, sexy. Being open with your partner builds trust, confidence, and connection, and therefore more pleasure. Start simple. Share your story, ask permission to ask questions, and talk about what safety means to you in a way that feels natural. Keep it friendly, not formal. It's not an inquisition, it's a conversation. Remember, everyone deserves to feel safe and respected. There's no shame in knowing your body, getting tested, treating your HIV or an STI, or setting boundaries. In fact, that's all something to be proud of. So keep it honest, keep it respectful, and keep it friendly. Because when we talk openly about sexual health, we're not just protecting ourselves, we're taking care of each other.
Another reason we love this community.
And that's going to do it for this week's GPHX podcast. A huge thank you to Art Smith for joining us and reminding us that our history isn't just found in books, newspapers, or government records. It's found in the places we gather, the friendships that we build, the communities that we create, and the stories we choose to preserve. As we celebrate Pride Month, it's worth remembering that every generation inherits the work of the generation before. The freedoms, spaces, and community that we enjoy today didn't just happen by accident. They were built by people who showed up, supported one another, and created spaces where we could belong. Speaking of showing up, we hope that you'll join the community this Sunday at Cruisin' 7th Cocktail and Lounge for the Regina Gazelle Funeral Fundraiser. Regina gave so much to our community over the years, and this is an opportunity for all of us to come together and celebrate her life while supporting her family. And don't forget to join us on June 16th for the community screening of Stop That Train, hosted by Barbara Seville. We're really looking forward to gathering with friends, old and new, for what should be a fantastic evening. You can find out all the details at gayphx.com/Barbara, B-A-R-B-R-A. We're also excited to continue our Summer of Solutions partnership with Lookout News, highlighting the people and organizations working every day to make Arizona a better place for all of us. Be sure to keep an eye on gayphx.com and gayphx.com/live for upcoming conversations and community coverage throughout the summer. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting LGBTQ+ media. And thank you for being a part of this community. Until next time, happy Pride Month. Take care of each other. You see us out and about, come grab a selfie with us. We love you, Phoenix.
We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side. We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side.
Thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.